California has been enduring 1 year of drought after another. 2011, 2012, 2012, 2013, 2013, 2014. These half years, winter is half the year, half years of drought. First year of drought, late 2011 to early 2012. That was sort of a typical or a standard La Nina situation. The trade winds are strong. They blow the warm surface area towards Asia, towards Indonesia, and you get this warm pool. How did that warm pool and the cold water over the rest of the Pacific, how did that lead to this high pressure system?
The cold ocean temperatures on the equator, as you correctly point out, would act to inhibit the typical rainfall that occurs near the international dateline and even slightly to the west of that.
Other side of Hawaii.
West of the side of Hawaii. And it's the absence of that rain that leads to the presence of a ripple in the jet stream. And that seems a little bit counterintuitive. But the lack of rain produced a ripple into the jet stream that was sort of stationary during most of that winter, that first winter of the drought, in such a manner as to produce high pressure, this ridge that you mentioned, which shunts the storms to the north and away from California, from which this dry condition developed in the first year of the drought. So the first year had a lot of the features that are fairly well known, that are fairly typical in a La Nina environment, that parts, if not all, of California can be quite dry.
That first year of drought, it was actually observed that a wave emanated through the atmosphere.
Yes.
And pushed on the jet stream. Jet stream is blowing around the world, and it pushed the jet stream, caused the jet stream to go north here, but then the jet stream would come back and go south.
So that effect can be observed by looking at these La Nina cases historically, and data for such events can now take us back to the late 19th century. One can estimate the pressure patterns in the atmosphere during historical La Ninas, and one finds a recurring pattern of the type that happened in 2011-12. In the report, we in addition illustrated using climate models, the types of models that are subjected to the ocean temperatures that were operating in that year, and running those models a multitude of times to see the statistics of whether this wave pattern comes again and again in the experiments that were conducted, and how strong is the effect, how recursive, how repetitive is this outcome. The report did 160 experiments in this regard and found a very reproducible first-year drought signal of the type that we were just talking about.
These climate models, they're essentially weather models. They're essentially the models that meteorologists use to predict the weather of the next few days, the next week or so. But they've been adapted to go much longer term. But still, you have the basic physics in there that warm air rises, water vapor condenses, and then might fall as rain. Energy tends to move out away from where it's generated. Things can push or pull on each other.
Exactly. It has all of the physics of how we understand the atmosphere to operate that is in the weather models used for making the weather forecasts for the next couple of days. It has something different from the weather models in that in a weather model, you do have to make a prediction of what the ocean is going to be, especially if the weather model is used to go out to a season, let's say. But the models that we ran were run after the fact. We call it retrospective simulations, in which the ocean conditions, the La Nina that you mentioned, and other factors that were in play, such as the sea ice conditions in the Arctic and the greenhouse gas concentrations, all those factors that were observed after the fact were given back to the climate model, and the model was run with that information in simulation mode.
I'm speaking with Dr. Martin Herling of NOAA's Earth System Research Lab. I'm Al Stoller. Now, this simulation, this La Nina simulation, did not always produce such a limited amount of precipitation. The drought was not nearly as strong in all the run results. What that tells you is that this La Nina situation is not the only reason we suffered that first year of drought, 2011
That's
into
exactly
2012.
Right. That's exactly right. And the way we see that is when we run these simulations, each model has begun from a slightly different starting point. In fact, the runs were begun back in the 1970s. So the starting points were sort of slight perturbations, if you will, like the flap of a butterfly's wing for the atmosphere starting point, so that these individual experiments were able to retain what we call sort of the chaos in the atmosphere that begins to unfold after a few weeks of a weather model, of a weather forecast, you begin losing your predictive ability in the weather details because of the Lorentz effect in this chaotic, very nonlinear dynamics of the atmosphere.
The Lorentz effect, as he famously said, and I'll paraphrase, the flap of a butterfly's wings in Brazil can trigger a thunderstorm way up north. Second year of drought, 2012-2013, we did not see that very cold water over the whole equator.
In the second year, the La Nina situation, this cold condition, had begun to return toward a more normal condition. It was still slightly cool, but NOAA no longer declared the ocean state to be a La Nina. At the same time, the ocean temperatures had warmed further in the far west Pacific. And so you still had the situation that was not normal in its entirety. Rather, what you had was a situation of a contrast in the temperatures that were very warm in the western part of the Pacific and only slightly cool now in the east. And what that warm in particular did was to focus a region of enhanced thunderstorm activity and rains in the area 150 degrees east and 140 degrees east. And that also acted as a trigger for a wave into the atmosphere that began to create a ripple in the jet stream. And that also tended to be somewhat persistent in the second and the third year that had a characteristic ridge of high pressure. It wasn't the same ridge of high pressure. If you actually looked at the observations for each of the three winters, this ridge, what was called a ridiculously resilient ridge, was changing each year. It changed its location and its attitude each year. It began moving progressively closer to the coast in the second compared to the first year and in the third compared to the second year.
When you look at those maps, it was a different ridge. It was a different pattern each time.
It was a different pattern. And if you average over the winters for the three consecutive winters to get an average over the November to April period, the rainy season period, this ridge in year one is located in the east to west orientation. Whereas by the time year three happens, the ridge is located with a north-to-south orientation and in closer proximity to the west coast.
It covered different parts of the ocean.
It did. In each case, it was very effective in shunting storms away from California, but each year that ridge pattern had morphed into something quite different. And what was an important result from the calculations from the climate simulations is that the models also indicate that this ridge forced by ocean conditions morphed in a very similar manner. So the ocean factors began to change, and with that change in oceans, the wave in the atmosphere began to evolve. Unfortunately for California, the evolving always evolved toward an increasingly ridge of high pressure or a system that blocks storms into California.
Now, when you ran the model results said that these conditions over the ocean would reduce precipitation over California, rain and snow over California, a certain amount. But the reduction was not nearly the reduction that we've suffered for the past 3 years. Something else is happening.
The third year of the drought was the most severe. And as far as we could tell from our experiments, while we could see an effect of the ocean, and had you known in advance what those ocean conditions would have been, had you been skillful in observing and then predicting that particular ocean in the third year, you would have been able to pick up some, let's say, increased risk of dry conditions, but you would not have foreseen how so very dry it was over the whole state in that third year.
What were the other factors coming in?
We think the other factors were principally related to the factors that are always at play in a complicated weather, which is the randomness of the weather that conspired in such a way to produce drought. Drought can occur without any factor involving the ocean's interaction. Drought can occur without having been driven by anything but the atmosphere itself doing its dirty work, if you will.
So unfortunately, there were factors in the atmosphere, the way the winds were blowing, where heat was moving from one region to another, where it was raining in one part of the world and not raining in another.
Exactly.
All sorts of things. All these things coming together, unfortunately, also were pushing on California drought.
And those latter ones would not have been foreseen, let's say, on 1 September 2013. You would not have been able to anticipate that for the upcoming November through April 2014 period, it was going to be a very dry winter for California. You would not have been able to foresee that, given that the analysis that the report highlights, that the factors were inherent in the weather noise. What you could have done is you could have kind of forecasted your way sequentially through the drought with a sequence of, let's say, 7 to 10 day forecasts, because the weather patterns themselves would have been predictable on an individual case basis in the classical weather forecast system.
You can only predict weather perhaps a week, maybe a little bit more than a week.
A week to two most. And so maybe you're talking about the first or second storm that you might have some hope of predicting. So like currently we're looking at a storm system coming into California here over the next couple of days. There's another storm lurking behind that. Behind that, it's unclear. And so it's in that sense that we can see certain types of unfolding weather patterns for the first week. Maybe the second week gets to be a little bit fuzzier, and then that's about it.
A lot of us are concerned about climate change. During the teleconference yesterday that you were leading and I was able to participate in, there was an advocate for climate change awareness, I guess you'd call it, and he was very upset that you could not pin this drought on climate change.
I guess there's a difference between letting the science tell the story of the evidence-based causes and an advocation for a particular narrative that one wishes for who knows what reason, but is not informed by science. And so I think it's important to distinguish between being disappointed by the result because it doesn't match a narrative and having the facts that are best supported by the science that's available at that time.
Marty, thank you very much. It's been really
My
good
pleasure.
Talking with you.
Nice to talk to you, Al.
I'm speaking with Dr. Martin Herling of NOAA's Earth System Research Lab. For KVMR, I'm Al Stoller.